in to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 250 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing very well.
Should we be celebrating 250 episodes?
I think we should. We should have had a bottle of champagne, really. We might have saved that for 300.
We did have one boozy. I think it was episode 100 we had a bit of a drink.
And when we opened the studio, we had we had Steve Shotton.
I saw last week, actually.
All right.
Rhythm Reaction.
Is he doing well?
Interesting work. He's getting there, man. Really, really inspiring, actually. We'll talk about that more in the future because I'm working on a new website for him, hopefully.
I'll give
that a shout out.
That'd be a good time
in the coming weeks. Livingthepresent.co.uk. If you're behind the curve and you've only just found out who we are, take a look at the website. All previous episodes are on there. The show notes, links from each one. Sean's written a blog post for this and all previous shows as well. If reading's more your thing. And you can sign up for email alerts too, can't you?
You can indeed.
As well as other bits and bobs.
The blogs are quite different to this in the sense that Ree says, is this blog actually about this podcast? And like, yes, it is. It's like a different angle
sometimes.
It's
a different take.
Yeah.
It's your alter ego talking, isn't it?
Yeah. Once I get carried away, get on the soapbox.
We're talking about happiness this week because the day we're recording it, the 20th of March, is International Day of Happiness.
Yep.
So we'll come on to that more in a sec and just talk generally about what happiness is, what people think it is and what we think it is, etc., etc.
Yeah.
You had a good week? You happy, Sean?
Yeah, life's good. Ree's repainted the wall and the mark is gone.
Wormgate.
which is very good.
Listen, last week if you want to know a bit more about that. Are we forgiven? Are we allowed again?
Yeah, I think we're okay now. We can play again.
That's good to know. Are you busy though? Busy bee?
Yeah, crazy busy.
It feels like just this morning, spring is kind of finally here and it's a bit chilly, the wind still, but...
Yeah. It's weird for me because I'm going online to Qatar still, and I do that early morning, so it can be like 5 o'clock here, which is 8 o'clock over there, and they're sat there in bright sunshine, and I'm looking out the window and it's kind of dull and overcast.
3 degrees. It was sunny this morning. Am I right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was
quite
good.
Pleasant, but a bit chilly still. But
you had a bit of a rough ride in this morning, didn't you?
Well, no, I wasn't.
I've seen the video.
Yeah, we're all vigilante cyclists. I was there. I had a bit of a close pass. A taxi driver whipped past my elbow for no real reason. There's no one coming the other way.
But when you got to the light, you had an energetic communication with him.
Well, there were some temporary lights about 20, 30 yards further up the road, which he was, I'm sure he would have seen as well. And he kind of instantly got stuck in that line of traffic, so I politely crept up alongside his window, and it was down, actually, because it was a nice morning. And I just said, he was a bit close there, pal, did he even see me? And actually, initially, he did say, where were you? Where did I pass you? And I was like, well, just about 20 yards back. And he said, I gave you miles of room. And then I said, well, I've got it on video, man. I'll send it to your boss and see what he thinks. So, which didn't relieve any tension in the conversation, shall we say.
It didn't make him very happy.
No.
So you need to report back in the next episode as to what actually happened.
Yeah, I'm going to email the company. I'm going to be polite, I'm not going to... I could technically report it to the police. There's got bigger fish to fry. But on that exact spot, almost within feet of where he did it to me, a lady was killed by a car last week.
Right.
And I cycled through there that morning and there were police barriers I couldn't get through.
Mm.
So just a bit more awareness and the whole world would be a little bit more happier place, eh?
Yeah, I like your idea about having a laser-created skirt around the bike so that people could see it in the road. That would be a really good idea.
Yeah. Watch this space.
Do you need to invent that?
Possibly, and I'm working with the council to hopefully get a few more cycle lanes... at least painted on, at least. That's not really enough, really, if you want your kids cycling on.
The other thing, if you're talking to the council, could you ask them to get rid of the potholes?
Potholes, yeah.
Because that must be very dangerous if you're on the bike.
Reasonably, although actually don't mind, they slow cars down, so I don't mind them as much as you might think.
In praise of the potholes.
Yeah, so I don't mind potholes all that much from a cycling point of view.
So potholes make you happy then?
Yeah, I'm fine, I'm comfortable with potholes. Anyway, let's not talk about cycling. I need to do a cycling active travel podcast, I think. That's all I think about at the moment.
Yeah.
But we're talking about happiness this week because Rhi, our wonderful business partner, and your wife, wonderful wife, sent us a link to alert us to the fact that it is, on this day, International Day of Happiness.
Yeah.
And that was Action for Happiness, I think, they sent that through, isn't it, who do a lot of work in that field.
Yeah, brilliant.
So let's talk about happiness.
I'm so happy.
Where should we start? Because, well, for a start, we did actually Google to see when it was International Day of Misery. And we couldn't find one, so there's a gap in the market there for a start.
I think in the interest of balance, we should create an International Day of Misery.
How to be miserable.
Yeah. Without trying.
Be a taxi driver. That's a good way to start.
I know a few people that could be the president of that society.
Yeah. Well, likewise, man, likewise. But most people are pretty chirpy. But what do you think happiness is? Like, how would you define it?
I think you're into a problem area straight away because happiness is like love. It means what I mean when I say it. Yeah, so happiness might mean I've just had a cream bun, or it might mean I've just won the lotto, or I've just got my best car. It could be anything, could it? It depends on how your system works.
Yeah.
You know, what motivates you, you know, what makes you happy. Some people need lots of stuff, lots of possessions, maybe lots of cars, and how big is your house, and all that kind of stuff, to make them feel happy. And if they haven't got the best of what they see as the best, then they feel unhappy. So there can be a lot of stuff and money attached to happiness. Because my thing about, okay, what do you really, really want? And most people say, well, I want to be happy. And then you say, okay, what do you need to make you happy? And most people scratch their head and go, well, a lotto win would help. So we're straight into money and stuff and associating that with happiness. And one of the things that we know from working with people that have lots of dosh is it doesn't necessarily make them happy. You can be rich and miserable.
For sure.
Yeah, and you learn fairly quickly that money isn't what happiness is about. It's about what you're doing with your life.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll come on to that more about the whole the money side of things. But do you think happiness in general, like the way it's branded and the way the happiness is seen, is too much about kind of smiling and being chirpy, and it's not enough about, like, fulfilling things you want to do in your life?
But I think that the two things run together. So that very often if someone is generally miserable and not feeling good about where they are, the mere fact that you smile, that you force the muscles in your face to go into a smile, will actually make your brain secrete positive endorphins. You know, so just by physically smiling, you can start to feel happier. Yeah, and one of the things where people start to see...
Yeah, happiness is something that you can actually, like, trace, like, chemically as well in your body.
Yeah.
Is what...
It's both ends, isn't it? It's because if your chemistry is positive, you feel happy. But if you feel happy, you create positive chemistry. It's either end of a tube.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like, working both is good. So if you do exercise, like you cycle in, yeah, then your brain is releasing positive endorphins, so your mood is up already.
Mm.
Yeah. If you then do things that make you happy, not just the physical activity, but just doing things, reading things, watching things, being with people that make you happy, that increases the level of endorphins in your brain.
Yep.
Yeah. So very often people are miserable about where they work or about who they're with, and very often the answer is, well, you need to change it. You actually need to do something about it if you want to be happy. If you keep doing the same thing the same way, you get the same results.
Yep.
Yeah, what you feed grows, what you starve dies. So that if you're feeding negative feelings and negative attitudes, then you're not going to be happy. You haven't got a hope in hell.
Mm.
You know?
Do you need the odd bit of sadness and struggle for... Can that be... Well, I say can it. Surely it can be a part of a happy life to have those ups and downs.
Well, some of the Buddhists that I've worked with over the years talk about living in the middle path, so neither be happy nor sad, and that kind of thing. Now, I am more materialistic, maybe, or more kind of human rather than spiritual, in the sense that I like to have a bit of up. I like to have a bit of woo in life, which means that inevitably there's a bit of down, which is different to the up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't see anything wrong with that. And I enjoy that kind of the darkened shade that you get from happy and sad. It's like if you watch a sad movie, that can be quite moving and does create maybe some internal sadness or resonance in some way.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean to say that you're unhappy, you're just responding to what's going on around you.
Yeah, which we watched the film Coco recently. It's the new Pixar movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but everyone's saying to me, you've got to go and see it.
It's just incredible. I mean, the work they've... Their backlog of films is amazing, and they're always about more than what you think.
Yeah.
You know, it's the cartoons, aren't they? But they're so filled with emotion and underlying meaning. So Coco, the film, is about death, really.
Yeah.
And I won't give anything away, but it's about death and about memory as well.
Yeah.
And I watched it with my two lads. Jacob enjoyed it because of the cartoon, and there's guitars and singing in it. Will's a bit older, he's six, and it hit him quite hard, actually. At the end of it, he was kind of... He said he didn't want to watch it again because he was scared, because it was scary and the skeletons in it, because it's on the side of the dead for a lot of the movie. But I could tell it wasn't that, really. I think it had really emotionally affected him, kind of this idea of death and the idea about memory, because there's this principle in the film where that if you're on the side of the dead, if someone in the real world loses or forgets about you, like the memory of you disappears from this world, you disappear from the world of the dead.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
So this guy was on the side of the dead desperately trying to get messages to the living side so that his family didn't forget about him.
Oh, wow.
And it gets really close, man. I'm kind of getting quite worked up thinking about it. It's really powerful. And what an amazing movie. But, yeah, it hit Will quite hard, really, because he's starting to learn about these things.
Because that principle about you die twice. You die once when your body stops working, but then you die when the last person alive who remembers you dies.
Yeah.
That's...
It's amazing concept, man. Yeah. So well done. Yeah. And, like, I just think it's amazing. Because, I was sad and I was welling up big time in the movie. But there's a strange kind of happiness from that feeling of, like, sadness, isn't there?
Because
it just kind of makes you connect more with your life and... The things, the friends and family in our lives, and how I'll be remembered in 200-300 years, if at all, which is quite unlikely.
Yeah.
Not many people do get remembered that long, do they?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you do need that sadness.
Yeah. But I'd say that, but like I say, many people say, no, you need to be in a concert.
A lot of people will avoid that at all costs, won't they? Any talk of death, any talk of kind of, even... Well, I don't know.
I think one of the things about children having pets when they're kids... is good because it teaches them about attachment and loss, and facing death and all that kind of stuff, and nurture, looking after, all that kind of stuff. So, and that has an up and a down, but it's not a negative up and a down.
There's an article I'm going to link to on happify.com. What is happiness anyway? And it's got three things. Basically, says that what happiness is not, to kind of get you thinking. And one of them is happiness is not feeling good all the time. I don't think that's even possible, really. So say you've got money to burn and you're always doing different activities every week. I don't know, skydiving one week, buying a new car the next week, going on holiday the next week after that. I don't think it's possible to maintain that level of happiness.
But what you're talking about then is you're talking about high levels of dopamine. So you become a dopamine junkie. You've got to keep feeding it, you've got to keep feeding it.
So what happens to people like that? Where do they end up?
We see loads of cases, don't we, of people that are very well off who develop drug habits, alcohol habits, and get into negative behaviours because they can't maintain the level of dopamine through activity. So they start using substances.
I mean, you don't have to be rich for that kind of hit either, do you? I mean,
no.
I don't necessarily say that we do things the right way, but I see a lot of people our age with kids are similar age to ours that cram their kids' lives full of activity, two, three nights a week they're out doing different classes, lessons, weekends they've got football practice, this, that, and they're always in a car dashing in and out here, there and everywhere. Now, we're not perfect, but we deliberately try. We have swimming lessons on Tuesday for Will, and we try and keep weekends clear, just to, especially Saturday mornings, where we just don't do anything till like 11 o'clock. We'll just sit in our pyjamas, make waffles, pancakes, watch a movie, and just chill out rather than just, because we've been there, man, running, dashing around here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and every few weeks or once a month we'll get in a car and go see people or what, but
yeah,
try and deliberately keep our lives quite simple.
Yeah,
it's working.
Yeah. So, how much TV time do your kids get? Do they get lots?
A reasonable amount. Yeah, reasonable amount. I mean, they're quite cool. They love just mucking around with Lego and Duplo and just playing in their rooms as well, but they're never too far from a screen.
Yeah.
And Netflix.
We got friends in Manchester who were going to go and see at the weekend, and their son has never had a telly. They don't have a television, wow, deliberately. You know what I mean? And I'm interested, and they don't have kind of like iPads, computers, or that kind of stuff around.
Right.
So I'm interested to see how he develops relative to other kids around who I observe.
Yeah. How old's the lad then?
He will be 3 coming up, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
oh, wow. Good on him. Be interesting to see how he turns out.
Yeah.
And how his reaction is to life, and how he, well, if he gets bored a lot or not, or he's always craving something to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
So we know that happiness is not feeling good all the time.
No. I think if you felt good all the time, that would just become normal.
Yeah.
You might say that someone lived in a world of contentment, maybe.
Yeah.
So there was no strife or hustle or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think that everyone listening to this has to think to themselves, what is it that makes me happy? Because, I mean, that was what got me doing what I do. It was the very question of, in 1980, me asking myself, what is it that I'm going to do with my life that makes me happy? And when I really, really thought about it, the two things that made me happiest were working with people, because that to me makes loads of sense out of life, but the other thing was playing music. And that's what I've done ever since. I've earned my crust since the 80s from playing music and from working with people. Yep. And that's kind of tipped into kind of writing books. I also like cooking, so I've done quite a bit of cooking. But, I mean, things that I like to do that make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and benefit others as well.
But that's a byproduct, isn't it? Because, in a sense, you know, people say to me, oh, Sean, you know, it's so good that you do this and you're so nice and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, if I'm honest, I'm probably ultimately quite selfish, because I do it because it makes me feel good. The fact that it makes other people feel good is kind of a byproduct.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if it didn't make me feel good, I wouldn't do it, would I?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's kind of, I think, and all kinds of altruism are like that.
Yeah.
If people didn't feel good, they wouldn't be altruistic. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, man.
They'd be martyrs if they didn't feel good, wouldn't they?
Yeah. We've got another one here. Happiness is not being rich or affording everything you want.
No. And all you need to do is to go to any apparently poor community, you know, or places. I can remember a friend of mine who'd been working in the Burmese jungle building a school as a voluntary project, and coming back, and he was just so shocked by how happy everybody was. Mm-hmm. And they had nothing. You know, there were little kids making toys out of plastic bottles.
Yeah.
And playing with them. And he was just stunned by how these, the children particularly, but the families generally, didn't have anything.
How content, like, they are, yeah.
Yeah, the material goods.
Yeah, they, Bhutan, the country of Bhutan, is the one that quite often has been pointed to. They have this, there's a World Happiness Index, I believe, and every year they kind of report, it sends out this report. Bhutan has or is usually right near the top. Denmark is another one.
Yeah.
But I think there's a conscious effort in Bhutan in particular to have, to rather than GDP as the main indicator of how a country's doing, is GH something, what is it?
The gross happiness product.
Yeah, GHP, something like that. I should have researched it more thoroughly.
Yeah. I know what you mean, though, yeah.
Gross National Happiness Indicator, anyway.
Yeah.
Which has other ways of, seeing how the country is doing. And I think in the West, inverted commas, and in the UK for sure, we've got a lot of work to do there.
I think what we create in our society, all Western societies do it, is what's known in psychospeak as relative deprivation. So the classic is everyone in the street's got two cars and you've only got one, and then you feel depressed and unhappy because you haven't got what everybody else has got.
Yeah.
You know, and that can be true about all these products that people wear that have got a name on them, and if you haven't got the named product, does that mean that you're less than everybody
you
else?
You still haven't got an Apple Watch, Sean.
Was no, Fitbit? I'm feeling really...
Dear me. Look at the state of that thing.
I think I'm going to have to just conform. And
yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's... Well, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of years of progress in countries like ours. And, you know, obviously, we've made a lot of really good progress, but I think we've reached this weird tipping point now where we've kind of reached maximum GDP... like 2%.
Do you mean GDP or do you mean
I mean GDP. I mean, there's this indicator, isn't it?
The gross national product.
Like, the economy is supposed to grow 2% a year forever and ever, and everyone will be happy. But how about we just, like, took a step back and maybe learned to live within our means a bit more and didn't aim for that?
One of the assumptions is that the European empires have peaked and that the power base is moving elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that the idea of us being the richest people on the planet and having everything may begin to change.
Yeah, and that's depends on how you define richness, isn't it? But I think we do have a really good opportunity right now to admit that that is the case, that we have peaked kind of economically. And we're not going to be able to keep up with these emerging economies that are kind of growing off the scale and everyone's... How about we just take a step back?
And enjoy what we have.
The trouble is that who's going to vote for a politician that says... I commit to 0% economic growth, or even more like bold, I commit to negative economic growth, but I'll make you happier.
But they used to say that between the wars, there was a stable period where the interest rate for years was 4%, and everybody lived on a 4% growth margin, and that's what they were working on. At the moment, growth can be down as low as like 1.5%. But there's times when, if you looked at inflation, it had been up like 15-20%. But in that period between the wars, lots of people would say that socially and historically that represented stability, where everything was the same.
Yeah.
And we weren't chasing this more thing.
You know, it's like that floating stick exercise we used to do on the courses, isn't it? Like, it's so hard to...
Sticks.
The helium stick, so you have a line of people in a row with the... Straight fingers with a stick or like a cane, garden cane line. Yeah. And the goal is to get the group to lower the stick. And it's almost impossible, isn't it?
Well, I have seen it done, but it takes about 3 hours of people practicing continually to be able to work together enough to lower
it down. So try it if you're at home with some people, or if you're in an office. Just do it as a little exercise.
If you just Google helium sticks.
It comes up. Amazing. I've done it. It's so frustrating.
I
think that's what it is in a situation like economics, isn't it? Because everyone's just trying to get up the ladder, up, and maybe we know that we need to also take a step back and just take the foot off the gas a bit and just breathe. But when you've got hundreds of thousands and millions of people all trying to get ahead in life, it's up, until something like 2008 happens. When the economy just says, right, that's enough.
But one of the things that is very real in terms of the materialness of happiness is that it's like probably everybody that's listening to this has got a fridge. They've got a refrigerator in their house. Yeah. One of the things that was pointed out, all the people in China all got refrigerators, what a negative effect that would have on the planet.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, that's on the basis that it's okay for us to have refrigerators, but then do we deny people in China refrigerators because it's going to damage the planet, kind of thing? So that kind of relative who's allowed to have can create relative happiness or unhappiness. I wonder whether people in China that don't have refrigerators are looking at people who have refrigerators and feeling deprived and therefore feeling unhappy.
They've all got refrigerators and cars and what have you now, because there's a lot of people. I'm obviously obsessed with cycling infrastructure, and 30 years ago, when China was a less well-off country, everyone cycled. They had their beautiful cities with people riding around on bikes. Obviously, in terms of democracy, they had a bit of work to do. But now they're a much wealthier country, and now the whole population wants to own a car.
I think. Oh my God. I think that the bit of China that we see as being the rich and everybody is a rim. My mates who work in China in some of the American factories say that in the hinterland, in the inner part of China, it's still very agricultural and still very poor like it was. It hasn't all caught up.
Yeah.
So there's a huge disparity within China. Yeah. So same true in India as well.
Yeah, it's an amazing time to be alive. But, you know, in Africa as well, it's up and coming. And they skip certain technologies. They don't make the same mistakes as us. So I think there'll be a lot of renewable electricity generation.
Yeah. I mean, one thing's interesting. You weren't going to say there's no landlines, is there?
Yeah, no landline, like phone signal. Everyone's just got a mobile. So why would you want a landline?
Yeah. But mobiles are interesting, aren't they? Does having the right mobile equal happiness? And is it that people like Apple are tapping into this idea about you've got to have the latest to be happy?
Mm.
Yeah, so that we end up with they're producing a new model. Is it every year or every 18 months? How often is a new Apple watch or phone? Or
every year, man. Well, every year they get updated. Almost 2 years I've had this one, but it's starting to slow down a little bit and get a bit just jittery.
So that's the iWatch, do you mean, or the iPhone?
iPhone,
right.
Little SE. Nice little jobby.
Yeah,
but I'm happy enough. So, and happiness is not an important one here, a final destination.
No.
Because we need goals, don't we? We need things to focus on. That's part of what I think being a happy person is. But I think there's an also, you need to realise that the happiness doesn't come when you get to the end.
No. Like
when you get that, when you build that house or paint that painting, the happiness is the bit in between, isn't it?
For me, the happiness is a byproduct of what you do. You can't get to happiness. You can't arrive at happiness, go, I've arrived now, and stop, because you have to keep interacting with the world to create those feelings within you.
Mm.
Yeah, and those feelings, very often, for most people, related to other people. It's being with other people, being accepted, belonging, all that kind of stuff that creates pure happiness. Happiness and security run together. If you feel secure, if you're anxious and you're worried, then you can't be happy.
Yeah, well, the only times I've felt genuine anxiety and worry is financial stuff, really. I've never been one for chasing millions and millions of pounds, but I do need that buffer and that security.
Now, you promised me that this time next year we were going to be millionaires.
Well, yeah, next year, not this year. Free beer tomorrow, innit?
Yeah. Never did it.
But it's so many people think that happiness is that place at the end of the road, that light at the end of the tunnel. And when they get there, okay, you get that little hit of whatever, dopamine. Yeah. Or. But then the next day you wake up and you're thinking, what now?
Yeah. But if you go back to the classic definitions of living the present, which if you wake up with a smile on your face and you can go to bed with a smile on your face, you've cracked it.
Mm.
And whatever's happening in between that is good.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's what we need to be striving for. It doesn't really matter what's in between. That's individual. It's what makes us feel right for ourselves.
Yeah.
But if we can learn enough about ourselves mindfully to get to the point where we know what we need to do to make us feel good...
Yeah, and being comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, and happiness follows from that, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I am intrigued by the whole kind of how you can be rich and unhappy, which is clearly you can. I think the kind of the way the UK economy works and the way that we, as we grow older, you get a job and then you get a house and then you get a bigger house and two cars and kids. I think there's a certain way that we do things because I've talked about this in the past, but the natural thing that we should do as a family next, once, I don't know, a couple of pay rises or if business grows for me a little bit, would be to get a bigger house. But I think when you do that, and when wealthy people do that, they get big 5-bedroom houses in the middle of nowhere, you isolate yourself from the communities, don't you? And I love where we live in our little horseshoe of houses because we know all our neighbours really well. I had a chat this morning just bringing the bins back up with my neighbour.
Yeah.
I think you lose that when you get a certain level of money. You move somewhere where you're not surrounded by people all the time. I think that is a big one, really, because you cut yourself off from the world, don't you?
Yeah. I've had 3 big houses in life, and 2 of those particularly were like shoveling money into a dragon's mouth. To just maintain it, look after it, you know, just to maintain the grounds around the house is huge. And we live now in a it's a little four bedroom semi, and mm-hmm. and it's great, and it's one of the best houses I've ever lived in, and I've lived in houses with 12 bedrooms and two staircases and all that.
Yeah, but you've got family nearby that pop in all the time, and I know they probably annoy you a lot of the time as well.
Like. No, it's lovely. I would never say that.
Never. But it's important stuff like that, isn't it, to have people around you and to be able to call on people.
But one of the things that you learn when you've got a huge house is you actually sleep in one bedroom at a time, you only use one bathroom at a time, you only use one living room at a time. And you may have four reception rooms. What are you going to do, rush from one room to another to make sure that they're all used? Yeah. Or use one room?
Not that it's impossible to be unhappy, because big houses in the countryside might have a village nearby, sure. and communities form around that.
I think it's a mistake to think that people that have money are unhappy. There's people that have money that are having a really good time.
Yeah, that's an important thing to point out.
But it's not the money that's making them happy. It's what they're doing.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I've started to look at quite deeply in terms of my... how I get around and how I, you know, cycle to work. And I've been watching how housing estates are built. Because quite often, I think there's a fundamental, like, misunderstanding about what type of housing we should be building and how it encourages people to get to know their neighbours. And is there a shop nearby that you can walk to that you don't have to get in a car to drive a quarter of a mile? Mm-hmm. Quite often, I think with new builds like that, kind of thought isn't put into it, or is there a bus stop nearby?
Do you know, there was quite a lot of development outside Nantwich when I had one of my big houses out there, and they bought several farms and then built estates on the farms. But within the planning regulations, they had to build shops.
Right, okay.
So that there was... some kind of commercial activity that people could use, you know, like a takeaway and that kind of stuff, at the heart of this new community.
Or something like that. Yeah,
they had to build all that. And,
cool.
And the builders had to do that as part of the deal, you know, which was interesting.
I need to investigate that more, really, but it would be quite interesting to chat on this show about how, I can chat with an architect about how they build or plan houses.
But there was, I think we've mentioned...
to encourage community and stuff.
On here before. Prince Charles replicated a village. I think it was a village from Devon, I think. And he rebuilt it in another location. Hmm. Identically, on the basis that if that village had been created organically, then if you replicated it, would have the same atmosphere and same effect. And actually it didn't, because the original village, people had come and gone over the years, but they'd shared this collective thing.
Yeah.
And it's true of any new development. You put it down the middle of nowhere, bungle the people in. And how many years does it take to create a community? Because the community isn't the buildings, but it's not even the people. It's the relationships with those people that create the community.
Yeah, which maybe suggests that happiness... isn't something that can be switched on and off. It's something that takes years to develop.
Yeah.
But it's worth it, you know, because at the end of your life, you'll...
Most cases, I'd say that things like community, relationship, people, belonging are the keys to making people feel secure and therefore building on their happiness. You know, some people may need to do certain things, like some people need to jump out of aeroplanes to feel happy.
Mm.
And that's okay. You're allowed to do that.
Yep. All right, cool. Have you got a resource for us?
Well, my resource is the Happy News, which is a paper that we have shouted out for before. It's a lady called Emily Coxhead.
Is it monthly?
It's
quarterly?
It's bi-monthly, I think.
Okay.
It could be quarterly.
Yeah.
But they do send them through to us. We have a big stack of them. And they're fun to read. Mm. I mean, they're great. They're good.
The Happy Newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's loads of stuff we haven't mentioned, man, about, the people you surround yourself with, etc. And the news that you're reading. I'm a news junkie, which probably isn't that good for my health. But
it depends on whether you take it on board as a burden or whether you observe it and think, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. But the Happy News is a great way to stay chirpy. And mine is a little video on School of Life YouTube channel, Why Happiness is a Useless Word, which is worth checking out. And I think, people need a bit of a more realisation about what happiness is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that new shiny object, is it? It's not.
Yeah.
It's something that can take years to cultivate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Wonderful.
Liveinthepresent.co.uk. Check it out for all the show notes and links, and sign up to our email list for a 10% discount code for the Live in the Present book.
And that'll make you happy.
It'll guarantee, that is a 100% guarantee that we can't back up in any way. Sean, you have a good week.
And you take care.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.